We read your piece on Kyle Lowry, and it was excellent. And the first thing I thought of when I started reading it, though, was I thought of our colleague Michael Grange, because when Kyle Lowry first got that contract, so many people in this market started pointing towards the idea that, wow, why did he get so overpaid? Why are you giving Kyle Lowry $100 million when there doesn't appear to be another suitor for him? In fact, we can still remember when he was in San Antonio right after he had signed the deal, and he was like, yeah, I was interested in San Antonio.
They
didn't even call me. He was like, oh, thanks, Kyle. Like, just gave you $100 million. Wish you wouldn't say that. But that the true value of giving Kyle that $100 million was so that you would continue to see a guy that, regardless of what happens off the floor with this team, is going to continue to buy into your program the way that he has this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's sort of what Masai knew. Is like, he probably had an advantage. He could come with, you know, whatever to make him stay. But he also knows what Kyle is and what motivates him. And just, you know, paying him and what he had proven his market value to be. You know, I would say you determine it based on whatever everybody else wants you or whatever everybody else wants to give you. But he had played at that level. He's an all-star. You know, he led them to the conference finals. So I think that, you know, those are things that you kind of have to reward. And I think that that's what Masai's thinking at the time. I mean, you know, there were no real viable competitors that could make him that kind of money, that could give him that kind of money in comparison. But that doesn't mean that you can't just pay a guy what you feel he's worth. Same situation with DeRozan. I mean, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, the Lakers wanting him, but I don't know if the Lakers were going to be committed to give him that kind of contract, knowing what their plans were, you know, down the road, you know, to get other big name guys and develop their young draft picks. So, Masai's been a guy that's taken care of his guys. He's paid just about everybody he possibly can when the opportunity comes up. So, that summer, it was sort of the same thing.
Yeah, and Kyle's had he's seen the business side of this game, of course, moving around a couple of different franchises, including the one that the Raptors just played in Memphis. I'm curious, because a lot of the piece talks about the reaction to the DeMar DeRozan trade in the offseason, how his attitude has changed towards the Toronto Raptors. Did you get a sense that it's significant, or is there much of a change in the way he views not just Masai Ujiri, but this entire organization?
I think he was hurt. He does know the business side of this. He knows that, you know, you can be traded in a heartbeat, and that, you know, things change and you just have to adjust. He learned that early on. Like, it's like I wrote that, you know, he was drafted by Memphis. You know, he thinks he's going to be the point guard of the future there. And then the very next year after his rookie season, they draft Mike Conley. And basically that tells him that he has no future there. So that's something he had to deal with early on. And I think when DeMar got traded, he was hurt. But I think he also knew that DeMar needed him as a friend to kind of be there to support him during that time. And that if he sort of added his own frustrations with the deal, he probably would have just made the situation worse. And I think he sort of held back with that. But I think he just sort of took the approach, you know, that he's still an employee of the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, the business doesn't change the relationship. He's still going to be close with DeMar. They're still going to talk after every game. And now he can actually be freer with what he says to him because, you know, they're not teammates anymore. So he can just say whatever he feels to try to motivate him and push him in ways that may have been more uncomfortable if they were actually with each other every day competing. So I think he just took the attitude of, you know, once DeMar sort of came to peace with it, and like, okay, I'm here, I'm a Spur, it's time for me to go ahead and do my job, I think it made it easier for him to say, okay, my guy is fine, he's able to move forward, so I need to as well.
He has moved forward, but this quote from your piece really stood out to me. He did it, he made his decision, that's his choice, all I can do is go hoop, take that however you want, in reference to talking to Masai about the trade. Are you surprised that they haven't had a conversation at all about how things went down in the offseason?
Or do you think that's even true?
No, they haven't. No, I mean, they have not. He has not spoken with Masai about the trade. And I think for Masai, I think it probably was in his best interest not to to do that, just because of the emotions involved and just the fact that he did have to make a business decision for the best sake of the Raptors. And I think they both understood that, you know, having a conversation isn't going to change what happened. And I think that, you know, it's best for kind of everybody to just accept that this is where they are and kind of just be professionals about everything. I think that, you know, they have a relationship, obviously. But I think when it comes to this, there were a lot of hurt feelings, you know, involved, and it wouldn't have necessarily been a productive conversation. So I think that when Kyle was saying that, you know, we're kind of, it's kind of too late, or you don't really need to have one, because everything is sort of out there. You know exactly what happened, and there's really no need to have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's sort of the way they both approached it, that a conversation is not going to make it better. It's not going to heal anything in that respect, but just off the conversation. Time is what's going to heal it. Winning is what's going to heal it. And I think that, you know, once Kyle was able to step back and sort of look at the situation and say, you know, well, I still have a chance to win the championship here with the Toronto Raptors, so let me just go out there and give it my best with what I have and who we have. You know, there still could be a special team. And if he winds up winning, that's really what he wanted. That's really what he wants to do anyway. He's a super competitive guy. And so winning a championship is really what he's chasing. And he has a team that's probably better positioned than it was last year.
Well, it fits with what we've been saying on this show ever since the DeRozan trade, which is that kind of marked the end of the Raptors are a family, and there's a different kind of culture here when it comes to approaching players off the floor, that it's DeRozan and his kids playing with Lowry and his kids, and it's Jakob Poeltl taking a vacation with Pascal Siakam, that the trade kind of signified this mercenary Raptors group. And I do think it's smart that neither guy has done it, because, yeah, both guys are very passionate, both guys are very fiery, and, like you said, what's the point? Everyone knows, everyone's smart enough to realize what's happening here, and to kind of go over things at that point. I guess there's a case to be made for it'd be better if there was a relationship between the two players so that they could be constructive together, or the two players, the front office and the player, so that they could be constructive together or try to avoid making similar mistakes, or not mistakes, but having mistakes in terms of feeling that there was miscommunication between players and stars. But yeah, it doesn't seem like this is at all a problem, because ultimately Kyle Lowry is geared to win. He is a super competitive guy, and everything in the piece continued to point to that, which is that this guy understands it. He's really smart. He's talking all about how you have a finite amount of time in the NBA, and you need to be able to capitalize it. And he does want to win, and he's reiterated that over and over and over again. And that's why I wonder, we talked about DeRozan, but did we kind of underestimate what a perfect sidekick he is for Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, and just his attitude and his approach with Kawhi arriving, you know. Yeah. You know, he could have come in and just been like, man, you know, you ain't all that, or, you know, I'm the man here, you know, this is my team, and you have to, you know. But he's like, you know, Kawhi's got a ring. Kawhi's been in the top three MVP voting. How am I going to, you know, stand in his way? So what he's done is, he's basically said, you know, when Kawhi's on the floor, I'm going to defer. I'm going to set up everybody. I'm going to get assists. I'm going to make everybody happy. I'm going to make sure they get good looks. And I'm going to move the ball. And I'm going to be sharing, caring Kyle Lowry. And then when Kawhi has to sit, I'm going to be takeover Kyle Lowry. And I'll do what I do to help my team win. And I think he knows that the best way for Kawhi to come in and fit in is to sort of do what he's always done and to play the way he's always played. And, you know, in San Antonio, he had the ball in his hands. He had the ability to create. He had the ability to do his thing and make his own shots. And, you know, Kyle was looking at it like, I want Kawhi to be comfortable here, you know, because he gives us a chance to win a championship. He gives us a chance to win. And I think the interesting thing he told me was that, you know, the coaching staff has made sure that on every drill, in every scrimmage, those two guys have been on the same side. So there's never been any kind of us going against each other unless, you know, whatever. You know, there's no potential for anything to go haywire just from that respect, but they're always together. They're always on the same side. And I think that's sort of to help the chemistry on the floor, so they know when they get on the floor that it's the two of them, and, you know, everybody else is understand the pecking order.
Yeah, no, that was the quote that stuck out the most to me from the piece, so that was the most impactful. Was you touched on it, this was Kyle Lowry. Me, how I am, I want to make sure he's comfortable. He's the most talented player that we have. He's our best player. He's got a ring. Why not? And Kyle Lowry's an alpha dog. Like, and the NBA is full of alpha dogs. And when he did first come here, there was question marks of the fans of, yeah, how is he going to fit in? How is he going to work with him? And conceding that and making sure that Kawhi Leonard is the number one priority here for him is massive, because, yeah, Kawhi Leonard is going to be the difference for this team this season. If they're going to go and elevate and become a championship-winning team or a team that makes the finals, it's going to be because of Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry. And this is why, projecting it forward, I'm a little bit more optimistic, because when I said best partner for Kawhi, it's not just the conceding stuff. It's that I feel like Kawhi Leonard, would have a bit of a kindred spirit in Kyle, that both guys are super competitive, that they're wired very similarly. I think we just don't think about it very much because Kyle is very vocal and outspoken, whereas Kawhi is not that way. But if you remove that element of it, you have two basketball players that are very similar in their approach.
Yeah, you have that, and you also, I mean, for all that was made about Popovich's comments about Kawhi Leonard and being a leader, there is some truth in that. And that, it's not just being a leader in how you step out each day and that you play hard, that you compete, that you bring it on both ends and you lead by example. That's fine. Strong leaders do more than lead by example. And I think in some ways, Kawhi doesn't have to come here. He may grow into more of a vocal leader as time progresses, but he doesn't have to come here and do that because you still have Kyle, who isn't afraid to say speak his mind, who the players here are already used to hearing him gripe or complain or and push them, you know, to be better. And I think that that's sort of it sort of relieves Kawhi of that responsibility coming here because Kyle's going to be that guy, you know, pushing guys, motivating guys, yelling at them, you know, and doing everything they can to get the best out of them. Kawhi can just come here, focus on playing basketball, you know, being a great player. And, you know, when the time comes for him to speak up and he feels more comfortable with his surroundings, that he can just do that. I think sometimes when you make a big move and make a big trade, you acquire a big piece, that guy comes in and he thinks will automatically have to come in and be the savior or the hero. But there's already an established all-star here. There's already a guy that the team is really to rally behind and support in Kyle. So I think that sort of helps Kawhi's adjustment in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, I think we discounted the hierarchy thing being as big a deal as it was going into the season. It's kind of why I thought the Raptors might stub their toe out of the gate, taking some time to adjust, but it's been no adjustment at all. It's an issue in Boston right now. But speaking of Kawhi, the numbers, at least offensively, haven't really jumped off the page to start the season. He had a great start, but since he suffered the ankle injury or the foot injury earlier, he kind of dropped off a little bit. The Raptors still have the best record in the NBA. What have you thought of Kawhi's start to the season for the Raptors?
Well, I mean, the most impressive thing about the way he's played is that when I watch him, I can see that he's not all the way back. You know, he's not 100%. And I think that he's still trying to find his groove and figure out, you know, what he can, you know, do out there on the floor. You know, but I think the fact that they're winning has made the adjustment pretty easy for him. And that's probably what stood out the most to me is that he's still an incredible player. And when he gets, you know, his groove and he just feels healthy with his body and can just go full out, that'll probably happen around the time when they'll need that, you know, especially when you get to the second half of the season, when you get to the playoffs, that's when they're going to need to be Kawhi to be at his best. But the fact that the Raptors are already winning games while he's, you know, regaining his rhythm with basketball, you know, that to me has been the most impressive thing. It's sort of like, I mean, I live in Philly and I'm watching, you know, them right now trying to make their adjustments with Jimmy Butler. And I know that they're not necessarily dominating, but they're winning as they go through this process. And I think that's always the best way. As long as you're winning, you know, as you go through this, it makes everything so much better because guys don't have to really go out of their way or put more pressure on themselves to perform.
Well, where do you think the biggest growth is still to come for him?
I just think with his health. I just think in terms of just feeling comfortable with his own body and just what he can do and out there on the floor, I still think that's been an adjustment for him. Because, I mean, you look at it, he missed all but 9 games last year, and that's not something that you can just come back and just snap a finger and all of a sudden be, you know, that MVP caliber player all of a sudden. But I think he's been playing at a high level while he's making that adjustment. So I think that, to me, the Raptors should feel really good that guys like, you know, OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam and those guys are really emerging because the pressure on Kawhi is not as big as it would be if those guys weren't able to perform at the level they have so far. So I think as a team, the depth, you know, is what's been most impressive, is that there's so many guys that can carry them for stretches and can perform, that it's going to make it easier for when Kawhi has to really be assertive and put his foot down, that, you know, the foundation's already been set.